When there's a sensational event like a natural disaster, a gruesome murder, or a kidnapping, Hollywood studios are usually quick to grab the screen rights. But it took a long time for studios to depict the Holocaust. A new documentary explores why. It illustrates how studio moguls were reluctant to portray Nazi Germany's persecution and extermination of millions of Europe's Jews. Imaginary Witness, Hollywood and the Holocaust, premieres tonight on the AMC cable channel. From Los Angeles, Iris Mann reports.
Imaginary Witness was co-written and directed by Daniel Anker. He recalls beginning work on the documentary a month after the September 11th terrorist attacks.
It felt very timely to be looking at how the media and how popular culture reacts to atrocity.
Anker is the son of a refugee from Nazi Germany, and many of his relatives died in the Holocaust. His film begins in the early 1930s, with studio newsreels presenting Nazi book burnings as little more than youthful pranks.
It's a big night for the younger Hitler set. The college boys are making Berlin safe for Nazis by burning up books that might lead Germans astray.
Hollywood's response to the growing storm in Europe was complicated, says film historian Annette Insdorf, head of undergraduate film studies at Columbia University.
The studio moguls, who were Jewish, were assimilated Jews, who I think were more concerned with their identity as Americans than with their ethnic origins. I don't think they wanted to rock the boat by calling too much attention to the Jewish studios, so to speak.
They also didn't want to offend Germany, according to the documentary, because that country accounted for 10% of their foreign market. Some studio heads did speak openly, and many worked behind the scenes through such groups as the Anti-Nazi League. A few films did deal with fascism. In 1938, Warner Brothers produced Confessions of a Nazi Spy, and in 1940, MGM released The Mortal Storm. Actor and producer Gene Reynolds remembers playing the son of a Jewish family in Nazi Germany.
And his father in this scene explains to him what it is to be a Jew, about the heritage and so forth. The producer, I recall, coming down to the set, and he says, "We cut that scene." And he says, and "You'll notice in the whole film, nobody ever says Jew. It's non-Aryan, but nobody ever says that I am a Jew, that he's Jewish, and so forth." And he said that with a certain amount of pride.
That same year, one man did openly refer to Jews and even satirized Hitler.
His Excellency has just referred to the Jewish people.
Charlie Chaplin had to finance the great dictator himself, and the film created an uproar. United States Senator Gerald Nye went on national radio to accuse the Jews of trying to propel the country into war. After Pearl Harbor, of course, Hollywood made countless propaganda and war films.
I say to you, let us choose to fight. Here, now!
But it was only after the war that American audiences saw what had actually taken place in the concentration camps. Newsreel footage shown in theaters drew huge audiences. Then, with a few notable exceptions, the studios fell silent on the subject of Nazi atrocities. It wasn't until 14 years later that Hollywood took a harsh look at the Holocaust on national television.
April 16, 1959. Live from Television City in Hollywood.
These defendants are the embodiment of what passed for justice in the Third Reich.
Playhouse 90's Judgment at Nuremberg was followed by a star-studded big-screen remake. But the first film to recreate life in a concentration camp was The Pawnbroker. The 1965 movie is about a survivor who constantly fights brutal memories. Speaking from New York, director Sidney Lumet says there were some things he wouldn't show.
In the original script, the writer's directions were to use newsreel footage, and I immediately knocked that out. It would have been, to me, obscene to use footage of real people, real concentration camps. Nobody went to a concentration camp in order for me to do a movie. I did not want to remotely be involved with any exploitation of the Holocaust. I didn't want this movie or any movie to use the Holocaust in any Hollywood sense of the word.
Lumet's feelings echo a debate that arose after NBC aired its 1978 miniseries, Holocaust. The documentary Imaginary Witness points out that the telecast became a catalyst for survivors, who began to talk about what they had suffered and even prompted the German parliament to extend the statute of limitations on Nazi war crimes. Nevertheless, writer and Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel blasted the effort as a trivialization of the events. But historian Annette Insdorf remembers that her mother, who had been interred at Auschwitz, had a different response.
At moments, she would sort of laugh and she would say, yeah, right, we might have been allowed to keep our suitcases at Auschwitz, oh, please. So, I mean, she provided a reality test on the one hand, but on the other hand, the fact that she applauded the making of NBC's Holocaust as the beginning of a way to get to large groups of people who don't know about the Holocaust, an inkling of what it might have been like, and greater sympathy for the Jewish victims, I took that very seriously.
The question the miniseries and Hollywood's other efforts raise, says director Daniel Anker, is how to bear witness. That's one of the reasons he made his documentary, Imaginary Witness.
One of the great ironies is that it's through these Hollywood films that much of the world learns about these events. And I think that you need to, as a viewer, question how these films were made and what stories they're telling, and be much more aware, or certainly should be aware, through other means of historical stories rather than just relying on Hollywood films to be your guide.
Imaginary Witness, Hollywood and the Holocaust, airs tonight on AMC. So far, there are no plans to release it on DVD. For NPR News, this is Iris Mann in Los Angeles.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.